Let's get this sucker started. Here we go. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, August 28th, 2014. It's just after 2 UTC. I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo is with us again this week. Welcome back.
Hello, Yvonne. hello. Yes.
And
yes,
as I mentioned, last week was entirely my fault. I had conflicts.
Yeah, it started, normally it's okay if we... Sam asked, can we do the show later? And I was just like, not this week. My son started preschool last week, and our schedule had been all over the place. It just really wasn't. I fell asleep that day. We didn't do the show. I fell asleep at 10 o'clock. I just could. There is no way I would have made it to later. We just couldn't have done it.
Yeah. So yeah, and it was one of those, you had a conflict on Tuesday, and I didn't ask about Tuesday until like it was already Tuesday. Right. Wednesday, I had something. I forget exactly what it was, but something with his school had like sponsored a little event or something, and we were going for that. And then Thursday, I had a concert. I went to a concert with my wife, and then I want to have the shows out by Friday, so it was done. And like I couldn't even like let's get a co-host because I was booked every day.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Right.
Whatever. So I as I said in the show last week, I ended up taking a half day from work and I did the show on Friday morning. But anyway, we got a number of things going on. It's time to chat again. As I go,
yes. I'm not racing in a car or something like that.
You're not racing in a car, and you don't appear to be driving at this very moment.
No, and I'm not driving, and I'm not out of town.
And
no.
I'm not driving. I'm sitting at my desk. I'm right here. The family is in the house at the moment, so I may be interrupted at some point. But they're leaving me alone for the moment. Anyway. We've got, the Middle East is blowing up, and Israel Gaza is another piece thing.
Listen, can we be honest?
It's always
it's always been like this. I keep hearing all these people, oh my God, it's gotten so much terrible. Does everybody forget about the Iran-Iraq war? How long that lasted, for God's sakes? Okay, all right. How many times Egypt... Israel, Jordan, how about Lebanon, for God's sakes?
Well, if anything, we've actually been in a quiet period.
Yes, if anything, we've been in a quiet period.
Yeah, compared to historical norms here.
Yes.
There hasn't been an outright state-on-state war in the region in a few years.
That's right.
Let me clarify, not counting U.S. invasions.
Not counting a U.S. invasion, yes. Okay, but if you count, but think about it. Iran or Iraq were at war for how long? 10 years?
I don't know, a long time.
It was a long time, okay, that they were at war. How many times that Israel, the war in Lebanon, how long did that last, for God's sakes? We were there. We lost, a whole bunch of people in bombing in Beirut and stuff ourselves. There have been movies about this shit, for God's sakes. I don't know. When people talk about, oh my God, no, the world's blowing up. So, keep forgetting we had Bosnia. There was Muslims there in Bosnia.
So I was given the list of all the stuff here, but are we just diving straight into the Middle East first? Okay, in addition to the Middle East, we've got the Ukraine, developments there too. We've got this situation where a 9-year-old at a shooting range accidentally killed her instructor, and people have been talking about that. We've got this, it's blown up all over the place in the last couple of days, this controversy about people reclining their seats on planes. And then the last thing on our list is actually Beloit College. I don't know if I'm saying that wrong. But
I was trying to figure out.
Some college somewhere does an annual list of, you know, the mindset of the incoming freshman for the coming year. So in this case, it's the class of 2018 is about to enter college, and they have their list out, and we thought it might be amusing to look through it because, you know, Yvonne and I are both, you know, 40 something
old.
Yeah, old. And, you know, these lists have been coming out for a long, long time. I mean, even, yeah, I forget when they started. But, you know, I remember these when I was barely out of college, if not when I was in college. And, you know, it's like, oh, okay, haha. But now you look at them and you're like, oh, my God. Anyway, so these are our potential subjects for today. Where do you want to start, Yvonne? You wanted to start with the 2018
list? Well, let's start with the Middle East. We're talking about the Middle East already.
Okay, let's do the Middle East first. We'll wrap it up with the 2018 stuff.
Yeah. Maybe. So why is everybody going off about the world is now in chaos? I'm like, really? Well, compared to what? I mean, people forget about the fucking Vietnam War, all the fucking African wars, for God's sakes.
One of the things, and I actually mentioned this last week, so apologies for those of you who did listen last week, but, you know, with all this ISIS stuff, there have been a number of people talking about how, you know, there are actually people quoted saying, you know, this is the greatest threat we have seen in the history of the Republic.
Really?
And it's like, you gotta be kidding me.
Are you fucking with me? So Hitler was not a greater threat.
Let's see. The Cold War, the Cuban Missile Crisis.
The Civil War.
You know.
What the fuck is wrong with these idiots?
And like you said, World War II is probably third on that list. You know, but, you know, ISIS and these guys. Okay, I get it. They're bad guys, and they've got some. Maybe they're dangerous, but they're not on the scale of these other things.
Not even remotely close.
Yeah, and Jesus. But you know, on the bright side, the Israel Gaza situation, as of the moment we are talking about this,
it's a ceasefire.
There is a ceasefire that's lasted a little while. That's intended. This isn't unlike the others where it was like, you know, intended to be a 48-hour ceasefire or whatever.
Right. This is supposed to be an indefinite ceasefire.
Yeah. And so we'll see. And interestingly enough, I just saw right before we came on, apparently some polling in Israel, Netanyahu's approval ratings are down to like 30% or something like that.
I would assume. I mean, because
the consensus is that Israel did not come out ahead in this.
No, not by a long shot.
Because even if they won tactically, and okay, you got rid of the tunnels, you got rid of a bunch of rocket launchers, and you killed a few of the leaders of the, or you killed some militants or whatever.
The cost was ridiculous.
Yes. I mean, especially, you know, public opinion cost.
I mean, just in terms of human life, public opinion cost, everything, I mean, it was just an unmitigated disaster.
And I think there's, you know, the argument, at best, you can say that now that all of this is done, cross your fingers, now that all of this is done, everybody's back essentially to the same spot they were, a month ago, except there, a lot of people died. A lot of infrastructure was destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, but otherwise, you know, there's no change to the fundamental balance of the political situation there, except, like we said, okay, and this is where things do perhaps change. I think Hamas probably is a little bit less popular than they were. It's that things seem to have tipped a little bit more towards the Palestinian Authority versus Hamas, and Netanyahu is in trouble.
Yeah.
Now I'm not sure, who exactly is, you know, nipping at his heels to take over and whether they'd be better or whether they'd be worse. But it looks like Netanyahu's in trouble, because the consensus seems to be he screwed this up. And he did not manage it well.
No.
And so I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if Netanyahu will survive. I don't know. I mean, and I'm not talking physically. I'm talking politically.
Politically.
He has been a survivor. You know, I mean, he's been around as a central figure in Israeli politics
for a long time,
since at least the 80s, right?
I gotta say early 90s.
Early 90s?
Okay. Yeah.
Because I remember him being on Nightline all the time with Ted Koppel.
He used to be, like, very public, especially during the first Gulf War. You know, he was on all the time on CNN and other networks, and I think that's really when his profile rose a lot, you know, back in those days.
Yeah, and he's been in and out of official government power in Israel a number of times. He's held a whole bunch of different positions in the government. And I would not bet on the idea that he's going away anytime soon. I mean, even if he lost the prime ministership, he's not going away. Yeah, he's not going to go off and retire or anything. Okay, but so Israel, at least there's a ceasefire. Yeah, hopefully,
his political career started in 88.
Okay,
size. Okay, there you go.
88. Long time.
88. I mean, he was young. I mean, by the way, I mean, because he's 64. So what the heck does that make him? It was in his 30s, around there.
Right. So now, let's shift focus.
Where did you put your iPad?
Hi, Alex. Say hi.
Where did you put your iPad?
It's plugged in on the bed, because you asked me to plug it in.
I didn't say anything after plug it in. That means you could plug it in anywhere you want.
It's plugged in on the bed.
That is not where you want it to plug it in.
Why?
Because that way no one could find it in there.
Uh-huh. I'll go get you the iPad.
Turn on the beeping.
Turn on the beeping.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's lost.
Yes. Excuse me, guys. I'm going to make the iPad beep so he can find it.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye for real.
This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right. An opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show. Which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And, hey, I'll keep you in mind. And maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne, if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show. Okay, I'm back.
You're back.
I'm back. Okay. Now,
goodbye for real. Goodbye for real. Daddy said goodbye for real.
Uh-huh. Okay. I was trying to start to pivot from Israel to ISIS. So, you know, last week I talked a bit about ISIS while you were gone, because we had the developments. We had the guy who was beheaded, and we had a real escalation of the rhetoric around ISIS. And I talked a bunch about it last week, but let's get your take.
Wait. I'm sorry. I was catching up on this. What subject are we on now?
You're just
again?
In a completely different world at this point. You were listening to anything I
was
said.
Because I was trying to catch up on what the heck was happening. Okay, hold on. Your son got me all. Sorry. Anyway. Okay. Go back again.
I said I was trying to pivot from Israel because I think we'd pretty much finish that up and move on to talk about ISIS and Iraq and Syria.
Yes.
And I was mentioning that on the last week when you were gone, we had the guy beheaded and we just generally had an escalation of the rhetoric.
Yes.
We've had increased airstrikes. We've had a few other things going on. And, you know, I talked about this a little bit last week. I just wanted to get your take on it.
Well, it goes back a little bit to what I was saying. I mean, this has always been an area in chaos. I go and talk about, you know, let's talk about the fact that most of these borders, as I've said before, are basically, I mean, you and I could have just taken a fucking pencil and said, oh, look, there's a whole bunch of Shiites here. Why don't we draw a line here? Or, oh, these guys will get together. We'll make it just one big country. I mean, basically, it's what it is. Okay? It's not, like, there's, for the most part, there's not a lot of rhyme or reason to this shit. The fact that, you know, we go and we get ISIS rising right now, which I was reading a whole bunch about the fact that Assad in Syria, not being stupid, was basically kind of like egging him on because he figured that it would be look better against the rest of the world if he was fighting some whack job crazy Muslims. And I got to tell you, his plan's brilliant. I think it worked.
Yeah, because you've had a lot of people in the last week saying, you know, maybe we should do, you know, enemy of your enemy is our friend and work with Assad now.
Right. Of course, you know, like McCain was before, was like, I don't know, there's pictures of him hugging these guys, right? The ISIS boys. There are some around.
Yeah, it's, you know, the loyalties of these people are always up for debate and who's with what group and whatever. But I think it's clear that at least some of the people that McCain was talking to.
So is now McCain saying we should back Assad now? So how about we just back everybody?
I don't think he's saying that. But, I mean, people are also talking about, hey, we should start doing bye, Alex.
Airstrikes against who?
Against
ISIS. Bye for real.
I'll be back, Yvonne.
You just bomb everybody. I mean, what the hell? I guess. We're going to do any bombing.
You're in The Valley, AM 1620, and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on, baby. Let's do the twist.
Well, they got a new dance, and it goes like this.
Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, sorry, Yvonne, continue.
So what was I saying? What are we going to do, bomb everybody?
Well, yeah, I mean,
like bombing. I don't.
There are a lot of people saying that we should go in and be very active and utterly destroy ISIS wherever they may be. And if they're in Syria, well, too bad. We bomb Syria.
We're going to bomb Syria,
Iraq,
too?
We bomb Iraq.
I don't like this.
And of course, you know, this extends. The same people are talking about how ISIS is trying to recruit people all over the world.
I know.
In Malaysia.
Oh, whatever.
You know, they're
yeah, but Jesus, you know, the guy, Christ, now ISIS, the new fucking Al-Qaeda.
They think that, you know, the guy who beheaded that the journalist
was from
London.
Yeah, and there was an
Should
American
we bomb London
there.
Next?
Listen, I'm not going to worry about this shit. Not going to worry about it from the sense that, listen, you know, you've got an organization. They're going to do what they're going to do, right? Are they going to recruit? They're going to try to get terrorists. They're going to, you know, listen, organizations have existed like this for a long time. Okay? That's one thing. Now, we're talking about, you know, we're going to bomb there for the purpose of what exactly? So are we explicitly endorsing both the Syrian and Iraqi established governments? And so therefore we're going to bomb these guys because they are against those.
No,
what is the purpose of us going and bombing them?
Well, okay. And keep in mind that I don't agree with this viewpoint, so it's...
No, I'm just asking what the per...
No, but I think the idea is, fundamentally, it really boils down to, these are bad guys. They said they want to go out the West, after the West. They are fundamentally opposed to Western philosophy and the sort of Western values, and they've shown themselves to be horribly brutal in any areas they exert influence. So let's kill them all.
Well, I will say this. Let's face it. They took that poor guy and beheaded him on video, right? Okay. Yep. And apparently they hold a whole bunch of other journalists and other people, Europeans and Americans, hostage. Okay.
And as I said last week, I mean, we're paying attention because it's an American. They've been killing people left and right through beheadings, crucifixions, shootings, stabbings, any method you can think of. They've been killing tons and tons of people in the areas they control. Anybody who wasn't...
Well, we've been paying attention to the whole ISIS thing. I think the whole thing, we didn't know what the hell the right response was.
Yeah, I mean
we were paying more attention because obviously they beheaded an American. But come on, don't say that we weren't paying attention. I mean, this has been in the news for the last month.
Oh, no. I mean, it's not like we haven't talked about them before. Right. But yes, all of a sudden, for some reason, yeah, and I...
Well, yeah, I mean, they beheaded an American. Yes, okay, we did pay a lot more attention.
Right, but, that kind of bugs me a little bit. Like, the other 10,000 people they killed, 20,000 people, didn't matter, but you kill one American and all this...
Look, if you're at home and something happens like 1,000 miles away, what do you pay more attention to?
I know. It's a natural human inclination. You care more about the people who are closer to home or the people who are more like you or whatever. I know. I understand. But it's something we should fight against. It's not something we should just accept. But anyway.
I agree, but
it's reality. But look, anyway, bottom line, though. You know, I think this is like such a typical pattern because the Obama administration is getting criticized for not being aggressive enough. But the people who are saying, be aggressive, be aggressive, be aggressive.
Yeah, we're the same idiots that were saying that's back. We were fucking back in ISIS already, probably made it even worse.
But the theme is, it's always, we got to do something, we got to be aggressive, we got to be aggressive. You never hear a damn thing about, okay, what's the actual plan that gets us from where we are now to bomb the hell out of them, and then how do we get from that to something that's actually better afterwards?
I know. Oh, well, why have a plan? I mean, fuck. I mean, plans are overrated. I mean, let's be serious.
And I understand, you know, plans don't typically survive very far, but I just want to hear some sort of plausible case that says how, you know, deploying a huge amount of military force is actually going to result in a situation a year down the line that's better.
I agree with you. I don't think that anything that they're putting on the table, like, at this point, I mean, really,
if we were
to bomb them, like, right now, it's just purely revenge bombing. They killed an American, and let's just fucking bomb the bejesus.
Well, the answer you'll hear from a lot of these folks is, how is that even a question? We're going to kill terrorists. That's good, right?
Yeah. Oh, boy. I don't like really just killing people just for the sake of fucking killing people. I mean, I'm not particularly cool about that. Can I be honest?
If we're doing it because
they are threatening civilians and other people, and we're doing it to defend those. If we're doing it because we want to extract the hostages that they've taken and defend those people, we're trying to establish that goal of established security for those guys, and we would have some kind of a fucking plan, for God's sakes.
Well, here's the thing.
To do that. The plan is
the key part. I mean, it's I know I'm a broken record. I even am a broken record by saying broken record. I say that almost every week at this point. But, you know, look, the thing is, it's very easy to get involved in these kinds of situations with the best intentions. Oh, we want to save the people being oppressed. We want to keep them from being massacred. But there's the law of unintended consequences. And you go in there for this good purpose. And in the meantime, you end up making things worse. And I think, you know, one of the, we generalize this. Originally, we were saying, let's talk about Israel. Let's talk about Iraq. We generalize this to just say the Middle East, because we also got Libya going on. And I think Libya is an absolute prime example of this, because we went in there, and the notion was, Gaddafi is threatening this city over
here. He's bad. Let's get rid of Gaddafi.
He says he's going to exterminate this city. It was Benghazi, right, that he was going to exterminate?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Anyway, so, okay, so we're going to go in and we're going to save the innocent Libyans from being exterminated by Gaddafi. And so we go in there, we put our... we added some support. It was a lot of it was the French, right, actually leading most of it. Yeah. But we were involved too, and there were a few other powers involved. And we basically helped tip the balance towards a certain part of the rebels to, okay, and now Gaddafi's gone. Gaddafi had to run, and then they shot him, and then he's gone. But what has been the result of that? The entire country descended into chaos. There are radical groups that never could have dreamed of holding power and holding territory under Gaddafi that are now in charge of major parts of that country and building up influence and building up control over areas. And there are other groups that are, and there's all kinds of battles for control. And basically, if you're an average Libyan, you know, your situation in life has spiraled downward since that involvement a couple years ago. It has not improved.
Yeah.
You know, and okay, maybe, I mean, Gaddafi may have even been bluffing about what he was going to do to the city. Who knows? He might have been able to do it. And maybe if you were in that one particular group that Gaddafi was about to just kill all of you, okay, we helped you, maybe, temporarily. But then the whole country goes to hell. Not to say, like, again, not to say Libya was the most wonderful place in the world before any of this, but I think that any argument that we somehow made it better through the Western involvement in the country a couple years back, I can't buy that argument. It certainly seems worse. And I think, and that's even though we went in with the best of intentions, with the whole responsibility to protect, and we see somebody about to being attacked, and we're going to keep them from being attacked, and whatever. But, you know, and I can guarantee you, when the people were planning this, they weren't saying, hey, let's do this, and then Libya will descend into utter chaos and be a horrible place for a decade to come. That wasn't the plan. But this is the problem with thinking sort of the one step ahead. Okay, let's go kill the terrorists. Okay, fine, yeah, you go kill the terrorists, like, but then what?
I mean, it's the same shit as what happened in Iraq, for God's sakes. Yeah, let's take out Saddam. Boom. Great. Beautiful. What? Now what? Look at this fucking mess.
Well, and you keep... I mean, there's just so many examples. I mean, we supported the Mujahideen in Afghanistan against the Russians.
Exactly. Look at... Yeah, exactly.
And
look,
guess who came out of that? I mean, that's where, you know, Al-Qaeda came from, basically, right, was from that effort. We supported Saddam Hussein against Iran in the Iran-Iraq war. You know, there's all this thing about, him gassing his own people. Well, guess what? When it actually happened, we were like, okay, that's fine, whatever. And we only started being bothered about it when he went into Kuwait years later.
Right.
You know, and in all of these situations, the common element to me certainly seems like, regardless of our intentions, we go in and we meddle in places, and we end up making the situation worse. And I keep thinking over and over and over, just get the hell out.
Listen, historically, you know, the only time that we ever invaded anybody that we actually left them without chaos and disarray, it was honestly in World War II.
Yeah.
That was the only time. I mean, but it took a massive occupation force for us to do that. And it took, and there was significant planning around the occupation. Okay? Well,
and not only that, but in both the cases of, you know, Japan and in the case of Germany, I mean, the occupation happened only after we'd gone through and pretty massively destroyed those countries, including huge numbers of civilians that had nothing to do with the actual conflict.
Absolutely.
I mean, and the argument, of course, in that time was of total war, and that all the civilians are, of course, they're involved.
But also, we didn't. One big thing that was one of the biggest mistakes, like in Iraq, for example, is that we left in Japan, for example, a lot of the existing functions of the previous government working. Okay. Even though we occupied and had the country under control.
We left the emperor in place.
We did this, we did that,
you know.
And like, it's amazing to me that you know, this long later, we still haven't learned the lessons about the fact that we went into Libya, we went into these places, and what we did is just fucking topple the government, right? Okay?
And then see ya!
Yeah!
I mean, not quite. We were obviously in Iraq for a long time, but we didn't...
But we destroyed every institution that was there before, okay?
And frankly, you know, we destroyed... You know, we have this sort of blinkered notion of good guys and bad guys equals how supportive they are of U.S. policy.
Right.
But, you know, honestly... Saddam Hussein ran. I mean, he was brutal in very many ways. Don't get me wrong.
He ran
a secular state. He kept the sort of ethnic and tribal and religious conflicts. He kept them submerged. And you know, the average Iraqi was better off under Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, unfortunately, they were, amazingly enough. We've managed to create a situation that even without the brutal dictator, we made it worse for everybody. That's fucked up.
and had hundreds
of thousands either dead or displaced.
And one of my frustrations here is that you know the Obama administration, while they're certainly showing restraint when compared to some of the more hawkish people who are speaking out, they're still digging themselves deeper, and I really worry. I mean, there's a balance. They're trying to be involved just enough to help, but not enough to get sucked in, and that's an incredibly delicate balancing act. And frankly, I'm not yet convinced at this point that we're going to pull that balancing act off. And I, with every new escalation of our involvement, I'm like, I get really scared. We're just going to get sucked back in here. Because it's one of those things where, you know, okay, we're going to do this limited thing to try to protect this group of people or to try to do this limited objective. And then as long as that goes well, okay. But if at any point it doesn't go well and we lose that, you know, I don't think we have the guts to say, oh, well, that's it. We're cutting our losses. We're out. I think we'll escalate.
Well, maybe. I don't know. You know, look, we know what we don't. I know what you and I don't want. Yes. I have no idea what the hell they're putting together. I have no idea if they're going to launch anything significant. So we'll have to wait to see what the heck comes out.
One of the worries here is the Obama administration seems to be divided amongst itself on this. Because what we've got, on the one hand... Over the last couple of weeks, we've had all kinds of escalating rhetoric about how evil ISIS is and how bad they are and how much of a threat they are, not just to Iraq, but to the whole world. And that gets back to the people I mentioned saying this is the biggest threat in the history of the Republic, which is bullshit. But on the one hand, you've got that, and then you've got other people saying, no, our strategy isn't to destroy them. Our strategy is just to contain them. Well, these two things are in conflict with each other. You know, if they really are an existential threat to everything, maybe we should be just trying to destroy them. But containment actually probably makes a lot of sense to me. It makes a lot more sense than other things. You know, I've said on this show before, the right strategy should be to starve them, you know, try to cut as much as you can of their supply lines and keep them from, you know, acquiring more and more weapons and more things to control. Like, you know, and people keep saying, you know, and look, they're getting all kinds of money from selling oil because they took over a bunch of oil fields. You know, right. If we're going to blow up anything, blow up the damn oil fields.
Well, that would certainly put them in a pinch.
I mean, and I know we're, you know, but, you know, we don't want to blow up the oil. We want to get the oil back. But, you know, oh, come on. You know, anyway. Starve their source of income. You know, if they're really selling all kinds of oil, you know, crack down on them being able to sell it. And if you can't do that, blow up the damn oil. Anyway, but, you know, look, if you're, I think containment makes more sense than just trying to go in and eradicate. But you have to be careful even with containment and how that works. But I think there's a very strong argument to be made to just say, screw it. Iraq and Syria, neither one of them are any of our business. Have it out. Have fun. We'll see you in 10 years when you figure out what you're doing. And I recognize that there is a chance that an ISIS-type thing would eventually become a direct threat to the U.S. on a larger scale. But I don't know that there's... I don't know that now's the time to do something about that that would be helpful. And like I said, even if, and this is something I said last week, but even, let's say in their wildest dreams, they succeed on pulling off a 9/11 style event in the U.S., or two of them, or three of them. We have to, like, not overreact in the way that we did to the original 9/11. You know?
Well, yes. I totally agree with that. I mean... Yeah, I get that, but...
Of course, I recognize if that actually happened, we would damn right, we would overreact, and we would go absolutely nuts, you know?
I don't know if we're going to invade a country again. Oh, God. I just managed to do this again. I'm going to kill this keyboard very quickly. I just spilled more water on this keyboard.
Oh, good job.
Well, at least this is just clear water. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, but yeah, if... Oh, believe me, we would invade, we would do this, we would do that, we would do all kinds of crazy, like, let's say ISIS pulled off three 9/11 scale events in the U.S. mainland within the space of 3 months.
Dude, three 9/11 scale events? Are you freaking kidding me? Listen, we probably, for God's sakes, I mean, the whole country would be at arms. I mean, we'd take over the Middle East.
I think that probably, would be the wrong thing for us to do, but I have no illusions that we wouldn't.
But you're probably talking about a World War II style reaction.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, forget this.
Yeah.
I mean, that I would say, forget about it. I mean, we're probably, yeah.
Well, because, and so far, the only thing that ISIS has done in the United States is there have been two pictures posted on the internet of people holding ISIS flags up, one in front of the White House and one in front of someplace in Chicago.
Well,
and the point of that is they're trying to send a message that, hey, look, we're here. But I don't know. For all we know,
Photoshop. It's
just, well, apparently they haven't been Photoshopped. But, you know, all it takes is some random joker printing out an ISIS flag and standing in front of over there.
Right.
Exactly. It doesn't mean that there's actually an organized presence and some sort of plot and blah, blah, blah.
Exactly,
that guy who took the picture in front of the White House. Okay, he took a picture in front of the White House. That doesn't mean he's ready, willing, and able to conduct, you know, an actual massive attack.
Right, exactly.
You know, so, yeah. And you know, maybe next week we'll be talking about some actual big attack happened. I just doubt it. I don't think we're there.
Never say never to anything.
Of course, one of the things that people always say, incredibly shocked. And one of the things people always say is, of course, the president has more intelligence on what's going on here than we do.
And so, they probably do. I'm sure they do. I have no doubt about that. I mean, we're talking with a little information that we have.
Well, and one of the dangerous things, though, with And I have absolutely no doubt they have all kinds of detailed intelligence about all kinds of stuff. But one of the dangers, I mean, and again, I go back to Iraq, you know, we had all this intelligence about Saddam having chemical weapons.
Dude, there was a lot of, yeah, well, I'm sorry, but
remember this.
There was, most of the information said they didn't.
Right.
That was like, really, somebody tortured the facts.
No, I know they did start a war. But okay? here's the bottom line of what happened there. The reason we did have intelligence that said there were chemical weapons was because Hussein was bluffing and he wanted people to think he had them.
Well, yes.
He didn't.
But the reality is that all the data that we had gathered basically said otherwise.
I know, but this is a general problem with having too much intelligence, is if you hear every time somebody bullshits about something, like let's say you had a feed right now, and you could just have a live real-time feed of any time anybody in the country said, God damn it, I'm going to kill that guy. And if you started treating each one of those as a serious murder threat, that'd be...
No. I know. I get it. But I get it. But,
you know, and that's the same thing here. Like, if you've got too much intelligence can actually be a dangerous thing. And of course, intelligence and, you know, I'm not saying being smart, although that can be dangerous too. But, you know, because if it's not put in the proper context, you can easily make all sorts of misinterpretations of the data you're looking at, and you can become overly paranoid, or you can react to threats that, okay, maybe that guy does want to kill you, but he's not actually going to. So you reacting and defending yourself against it is actually making things worse. Anyway.
Right.
I think we're done with that. Let's take a break.
Let's take a break.
We'll be back after this and talk about whatever's next. Back after this.
This is a break. Oh, yes, this is a break. This is a break because no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you. So this is a break. This is a wonderful break. A wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes. This is a break. Break. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break. Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over.
And now we're back.
Yes.
So. We got guns, Ukraine, airline seats, and new freshmen in college. Where do you want to go?
Let's talk about guns.
Okay, so this particular scenario, and I guess this is just the kickoff to the discussion. Was she eight-year-old girl or nine-year-old?
Nine-year-old girl.
Went to local gun range, and this was where?
It was set in Nevada.
She's, I guess, taking lessons, whatever. She took a lesson on an Uzi machine gun.
Yep.
And,
very useful.
And the instructor apparently just, you know, here you go, go ahead. And she wasn't able to control it. The recoil was strong.
First she had her shoot in the machine could be set to single shots or automatic. Right. So first she had her do a couple of shots, taking like a few single shots, and then he set it to full auto. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, then
she lost control. Bottom line.
Yeah.
The gun flew up. It shot him. He died. My first thought is, of course, I feel so bad for that girl. You know.
Yeah.
And you know, of course, this is not unique. There are accidental shootings involving children all the time. You know, for a while, one of the websites I follow was, they must have had a Google alert for it because they were posting at least one of these every week. And they're not uncommon. They happen all the time. You know, and most of the time it's, you know, kids at home finding weapons that were left unsecured and accidentally shooting themselves or their siblings or their parents or something.
Yep.
This case is a little bit different. It's in, it was in a shooting range where supposedly with an instructor right there who supposedly should have known. Better. There should have been safety things going on there. I've heard a number of people saying, hey, if you're instructing somebody on how to use these weapons for the first time, the instructor is supposed to keep their hands on the weapon to help maintain the control because they don't know what to expect.
Right.
You know, or you'd think, you know, you move beyond a barrier or something like that. I don't know. But,
well, I mean, it's a very powerful weapon. It's a 9-year-old girl. She, it appears that, according to the descriptions I was reading earlier, she was having difficulty with her recoil in a single action, for God's sakes. All right?
And you know, so they're like, well, try this.
Right. I mean, so what the hell would have told you if she had difficulty with a single action that, oh, yeah, just put it on full auto. I mean, I don't get it. I don't, I fired guns when I was a little kid. I fired like little 22 caliber rifles. Okay. All right. And the reason why we shot like little pellet guns or that kind of stuff was because they wouldn't let us fire more powerful stuff because it was just not safe. Okay. I mean, I'm just, you know, what the hell were they thinking? Oh, yeah, this is going to be fun. Here, fire an Uzi. I have no idea. I mean, it just seems insane to me.
Yeah, I mean, and you and I are probably, I mean, you're more experienced with these things than I was. Like you said, you actually shot things off as a kid. You know, as far as I know, I've never touched a gun in my life. I've seen them in person once or twice. That's it. You know, but I've never fired one. And I just the whole culture of it is completely alien to me. I don't see how it would be fun.
Well, I mean, you know, look, people hunt.
No,
it's been,
I know,
been around
I know
for
people,
a long time.
Hunt.
I mean, we did target shooting.
And I guess
know,
I actually do understand, like, you know, how target shooting might be fun.
Targets. But, I mean, you know, it's not like, we were out there and we were practicing, you know, targets.
Shooting the cans
but we
off
had
the thing.
Quite a lot of safety. You know, there was video of this. I mean, if you saw this, I am utterly befuddled by what the guy was doing. I mean, you could see that she struggled with the first shot, just one, and said, oh, here, fire one. Okay, great. Oh, yeah, you struggled with it. Oh, okay. Here, keep firing. But I'm like, really? That's it? I'm like, I don't know. I just, you know what? I mean, okay, I know that in the U.S. we like people to shoot guns from an early age. I get that. I mean, I actually did it when I was at an early age. Okay, so I'm not going to say that I didn't do it, and I knew plenty of people to do it. But what I am saying is that I'm sorry, but you know what? Putting a child. I mean, I knew. Listen, the recoil for me, something like that was hard enough as it was. I mean, I'm like Jesus Christ. You give him a freaking fully automatic machine gun. It's just nuts. It's just. And I don't see why anybody would do anything of the sort. I don't know. I just think it was completely irresponsible. I mean, it was a completely irresponsible act all around. You know, I don't know why the parents, you know, would think that taking your 9-year-old child to shoot an Uzi is fun. I you know, that is not a test of any skill. You know, we're talking about target practice. It's not fucking target practice. What the fuck? I mean, you don't shoot, it's like, I don't know. You talk about hunting. You're not hunting for ducks with a fucking Uzi. The fuck does it go to? What are you going to do with a duck that you shot with an Uzi? You're going to, you know, what? It's useless. So it's not for hunting. It's not for target practice. It's for what? For a sheer power thrill? But that's not for something for a girl like that. You know, I don't know.
So, okay. Are there any, I mean, obviously this particular case was horrible tragedy. This girl is going to be screwed up for a long time. But are there any larger sort of policy issues that should come out of this? Or is this just another, you know, I feel like I don't even want to dive into the larger like gun control issue, because it's like, you know, it's settled arguments on both sides. We know what the anti-gun people think. We know what the pro-gun people think. There's a bunch of people sort of in the middle who are like, you know, okay, we don't want to ban them. We don't want to keep them away. But, you know, reasonable regulation is fine. But that the middle group never wins out because of the politics of it. What is there to say here?
These people are idiots, I guess.
I mean, should there be, you know, stricter age limits on these kinds of shooting ranges? I mean, you went there as a kid. Should there be no kids allowed in these places, 18 and over only? Or let them there for small caliber, but, like, for the big guns, you have to be 21? I don't know.
Or
leave it alone. No regulations.
People who are going to shoot stuff. I mean, if you want somebody under the age of 16 to be shooting something, it has to be something of a very small power or caliber.
Do you think this is actually a place where government at state, local, or
I know some. I know there was a state that something like this happened, that they actually passed restrictions to that effect in a different state.
Do you think the right way to approach this is some sort of legislative solution, or is it just, you know, bang on people's heads and say don't be idiots?
Yeah, basically.
I mean, because the bottom line is, no matter what you do, people are going to be stupid.
Well, yeah, I know, but I think that if you put, let's face it, this happened in a controlled environment in a gun range that is actually trying to follow the laws according to the state. Yeah.
I mean,
I think that if you actually set a law, to something like this, then, I mean, let's face it, it certainly would avoid another tragedy of this kind. So it's simple as that. I mean, this is a place that was following stuff by the letter of the law.
Yeah, well, and I mean, maybe
the, obviously
maybe
the letter of the law that existed was not good enough.
Maybe the instructor just could have had more training on how to properly do this and safety measures and, you know, like, I don't know. Because like you said, when you watched the video, you thought this guy is doing all the wrong things.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was just, to me, it seemed like he was just being careless, to be honest. Yep.
Okay, let's take a break. I've got a small child to remove again, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Or after this break. Hello?
Hello.
Hey, there you are.
Okay, yeah, sorry. I got to hang
on. Okay. And we're back. Yeah, it's so much fun living with an almost 5-year-old.
Almost 5-year-old.
It is actually a lot of fun living.
It is actually a lot of fun. I know.
It's actually great. But you know, when you're trying to sit and concentrate on something.
It's not exactly.
And actually, I must say, he's much better at this stuff than he used to be. Like, more recently, I used to not be able to work from home on days he was going to be home, because that just was not going to work. But he's actually started to respect that. So if I'm working from home, he will leave me alone almost all day.
Oh, that's
maybe
good.
Maybe come in to say hi a couple times or whatever, but for the most part, he leaves me alone and lets me work. But like, today, I was working from home today, And actually, it's screwy. I had to do something at his school in the morning, so I didn't actually get really started working from home till afternoon. And then, so I, because of that, I kept working from home after I would normally have stopped. So he only had like about 15 minutes of my attention between when I finished doing work and when I went up to get ready for the podcast. So that's part of why he's being a nudge, is he hasn't had like a lot of me today. And usually, like when I'm done with work, I will, you know, go, I will play with him consistently for like an hour and a half straight, you know, to give him that attention before moving on to other things. So he didn't get that today.
But. Ah, I see. Well,
anyway, so
I know that my son was in my home office like right now because all of a sudden I looked at my son likes buttons and I know that my scanner was turned off and I'm like, okay, there you go. Yeah, that had to be him.
Just wait.
He also likes to make coffee for me, by the way.
Excellent. Right? Do you have one of those all-in-one printer things?
I have one of these all-in-one printer, scanner, or copier.
So just wait till he figures out that he can open the lid, put his hands or face in there, and push the button and make copies.
Oh, I'm sure he'll get to that.
Yeah.
Oh, he's got, well, you know, he likes, well, I will say this. He likes to make the coffee.
That's good.
So he'll take the little ladder in the kitchen, he'll get it up to the coffee machine, he'll climb up to the top step. Okay, all right. He's standing there at the coffee machine. Now being my son, okay, all right, he wants to give some kind of an order around this. So instead of actually him pressing the button, he will grab my finger and then make me press.
Oh, of course. Yes.
To have the coffee. Not him pressing the button.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Daddy, here. Could you press the button so the machine works? Oh, okay. Yes. So, yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Very, yeah.
God's sakes. So we got left Ukraine reclining in the 2018 list.
Let's go with the 2018 list.
Okay. So, I've got this in front of me. For anybody who's looking for this, it's BELOIT.edu. And then if you just go to / mindset, I think, you get all of these from... You get an explanation of what it is and blah, blah, blah. And then you can click through to see the 2018 list specifically. And so let's just, and these are always somewhat of mixed quality. Some of them I'm like, oh God.
Yeah, I know. I was reading some of the stuff. I'm like, yeah, it's not that great.
Yeah. Some of them aren't that great. Cause you got to keep in mind, this was not originally intended to be, you know, something everybody passes along and like, haha, that's funny. This was actually something that they developed to hand out to their professors and staff every year before the freshmen arrived to try to sort of get them prepared for, okay, you've got a bunch of new freshmen coming in. They have very different experiences than you do in life. And here are some of the differences that you should be prepared for when you're interacting with these new kids coming in, you know, cause you got your 50, 60 year old professor and you got the 18 year old kids coming in. They're like practically from different worlds. Right.
Yep. True.
Yeah, so we've got things like, yeah, the first thing on the list was for the class entering right now, freshmen entering now, who will be the class of 2018 for college, you know, their first few weeks of kindergarten was when 9/11 happened, and they saw all those images. The binge-watching TV shows is now, like, you know, a normal thing, as opposed to, you know, you turn on the TV and you watch for things, or even you
can I be honest, you know, I did that a long time ago. This is not a new thing.
It's much more popular than it was. I mean, to do it before, you had to like go buy the DVD box set or something.
No, I did it with videotapes.
Well, right. Okay. You had, in any case, you had to buy or rent the physical media. You go there. Now you just go click, click, click in Netflix and boom, you're there.
I guess. Yeah.
And you can watch you can watch like the whole, you know, 15 years of some old TV show.
I guess it was tougher. Yes. To do it when I did it. Yes. But nonetheless, I did do it.
Yeah, it was tougher, and a lot less was available. You know, certain more popular TV shows were and things like that, but certainly not now. you know, if you find a show that's not available, that's the exception. I mean, I presume that's not actually true, because there are all kinds of shows that were not very popular that aren't on. But like, if you think of practically any popular show, you know, from, you know, the 60s onward, chances are you can find it, you know, online streaming, or worst case scenario, you buy it from iTunes or something. If you can't find it.
Yeah. I mean, like today, I mean, I don't know, my wife, she saw the other day some old movie, and it's like, I don't know, I went on Netflix, I went on HBO Go, I went on iTunes, and boom, there it is. I'm like, here you go, look, watch it, there you go. She's watching, like, right now, some very old, just whatever, average movie, nothing.
Well, and special. I've mentioned, I've moved most of my TV watching online at this point. There are very few things I get directly off the cable. So, like, I'm watching, I decided I'm going to go through and watch all the Star Treks. So I'm working my way through from the old ones onward.
I mean, old and new and all the spinoffs?
Yeah, I'm just starting at the beginning.
So you're going to watch Deep Space Nine, all this shit?
Yeah, so far I'm only on season two of the original series, but I'm working my way through.
Okay.
Now I am not binge watching, though. Like, I haven't yet gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm just going to watch episode after episode. I'm sprinkling. Like, I'm actually watching 10 shows right now. And I'm alternating which ones I'm watching. So instead of watching one straight through, I'll be like, okay, I'll watch a Star Trek. Okay, I'll watch a Breaking Bad, because I'm catching up with Breaking Bad now, because everybody was talking about how good it was. I'm watching Bones. I'm watching Game of Thrones. I'm watching House of Cards. You know, all of these things. And, you know, and I don't, like, just sit there and watch one after the other. But, like, when I have a moment, I'll pick one of these and I'll watch an episode. And then next time I'll watch a different episode of a different one. And I'm working my way through them. And, you know, anyway, so that's anyway, the point is, this is now a normal way of watching things, as opposed to something only certain weird people would do. Let's see. I'm going to skip the ones that look stupid. Pressing pound on the phone is now hashtag. John Stewart's always been on. Saturday morning cartoons aren't really around anymore like they were when we were kids. Fox News and MSNBC have always been around. Hong Kong's always been part of China.
Right.
You know, Joe Camel for cigarette advertisements were never around.
Yeah.
No
cigarette advertising, that's for sure.
Yeah. Cloning has always been a fact, not science fiction. Those stupid ads for prescription drugs listing all the side effects have always been on TV. let's see. There's always been TV show ratings.
I don't know. As far as I recall, there's always been TV show ratings.
That was actually introduced, like, not until, dude, like, the 90s or something.
Dude, what the fuck are you talking about?
Not of movies, course, no. TVs. TV shows.
Yeah, TV shows.
The little thing that says, like,
oh, you TV mean not like Nielsen ratings. You mean ratings?
Ratings. Oh. Like the same as movie ratings, like R.
No. I thought you were talking like Nielsen ratings.
No. You're right. Those have been around since the dawn of time.
Right.
You know, the cavemen had Nielsen ratings.
Yeah.
Unabomber's always been behind bars. They've never had to do the. You know, pornographic magazines have never seriously existed. It's all.
Yeah. Now that's true. There you go.
The way they put it here, another blessing of digital technology. They have never had to hide their dirty magazines under the bed.
Yes, they have not.
You know, all you have to do is type in a URL.
Yeah, there you go. You get everything you want.
Maybe turn on privacy mode if you want, but, you know.
Right.
Bill Gates has always been the richest man in the United States.
Well, he hasn't been,
in the U.S., yes. He hasn't always been the richest man in the world, but he's been consistently the richest man in the U.S. for a long time.
Yes. Yes.
American deaths from AIDS have always been going down.
Right.
Let's see. Two-term presidents are routine, but none of them has ever won in a landslide. The last landslide election was 1984. Reagan in 1984. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right.
And before that, actually, if you look at the history, landslides were fairly routine.
Right.
After the 2012 election, I posted a chart on the actual popular vote between the two parties and how it balanced off. And one of the things that you saw was, you know, if you go the further back you go towards the beginning of the 1900s, I mean, it was, you know, people won by 60% margins. You know, FDR's wins were like huge compared to anything we see today. You know, and we just don't see that. And it would be a swing just as much. Like, you know, when they switch from the Republicans to Democrats, it's like suddenly the whole country changes their mind. Whereas right now we've got, you know, the two sides are basically where they are. And there's a small group of people in the middle who may be changing.
There may be swing. Yep.
But, you know, looking at these old elections, it's like, you know, all of a sudden in like a 4-year span, you go from being, you know, 70% of the people vote Democrat to 70% of the people vote Republican. And it's like, whoa, you know, anyway, or sometimes even more than 70%. Any of these others strike you as being interesting? I'm actually a little disappointed by this.
I was looking at the list. It was not that great, can I be honest? I mean,
I think we could do better.
I thought so. I agree.
They've never used Netscape as their web browser.
That's right. There you go. They never actually videotaped anything.
That's right.
We videotaped, you know.
The Netscape one, by the way, was from this list. But I actually think, you know, a few years ago, what would be on this list was, you know,
surfed the web on AOL.
They've never surfed the web or something like that, or they've never been online. That's not even there anymore, because even the old folks like barely remember those days at this point.
Yeah, but they never used like AOL, for example. Yes. Or Prodigy or CompuServe or any of that stuff, for example.
No,
none of that. You know, they probably never typed an email in all caps.
Cars have always had airbags.
There you go. That's totally true. I mean, you know, they've been around where cars have, all of them have had airbags.
They've never been in a car with a bucket seat. No, a bench seat. Sorry, not
a bench seat.
They're all bucket seats.
A front
bench seat.
Yeah.
Although apparently, I just read something about this fairly recently. The last one of those to go out of production in the U.S. was actually not that long ago.
Really? Yeah. Wow.
It wasn't very popular, I guess. It was an option, but it was only a few years ago where it was stopped offered. Being honest.
Yeah, no. I remember the front bench seat, and I remember how uncomfortable it was.
I remember running around the car loose while it was going.
Oh, my rack. Jeez, are you kidding me? I ran around the car. I did that too all the time. I never wore a seatbelt in the frickin' car.
I usually did, and by the time I was a teenager, I couldn't imagine being in a car without a seatbelt.
But when I was a small kid?
Yeah, but when I was little, yeah, I remember.
Oh, yeah, are you kidding me? Jumped up and back and forwards and back like nothing. No problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
They've never cranked down a window in a car.
Oh,
with an actual crank
down, with an actual, you know, I wonder if they still sell cars with like, you know, with cranked down windows. I bet you that there's got to be some.
I haven't seen one in. I mean, I'm sure there's some somewhere, but I haven't seen one in the U.S. in a long time.
I have not seen one in the U.S. A new one in a long time either. I did own a car with manual windows. I mean,
So did I. So did I. My first car had manual windows. Yep. Only my first car. After that, they all were automatic. But
yep,
my first car.
I agree. Yep.
Anything else you want to add to this, or shall we move on?
Let's move on.
Okay. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back. And we'll see where we go. Back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, here we are. We got one serious and one not so serious. Ukraine or reclining?
Ah.
Or do we want to skip Ukraine and move straight to
reclining? Let's go to recline. Yeah, okay. Skip Ukraine. We talked plenty about war.
Yeah, there's stuff going on in Ukraine. The Russians are escalating. There are people going back and forth. It's whatever. We'll see.
More of the same bullshit. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, so reclining airline seats. I know this is near and dear to your heart, Yvonne. This exploded into conversation again because there was a conflict on a recent flight where someone used a device to keep the person in front of them from reclining on a flight.
It's called the knee defender.
The knee defender.
Right.
And the stewardess, I guess, asked him to remove the device.
Because it's prohibited in the airline, by the way.
Because it's apparently prohibited, at least in this airline. And then the person who was in the seat in front of him, like, threw a glass of water on him. A fight ensued. And the pilot landed the plane.
Threw them both off the plane.
Yes. And then, so, after this, you know, there's been a wide and vigorous debate.
Well, the guy wrote an article, like, defending himself. It was on Time.
Oh, I haven't actually read that one yet.
Yeah. And, you know, and I've been making comments because my first comments were basically attacking this jackass. Because I'm sorry. I mean, so the guy.
I have not read his article, but the basic argument, of course, right, is that, you know, if you're a bigger guy and someone reclining into you is potentially going to hurt your knees. It's going to keep you from using your laptop. It's basically invading your space.
Listen, if you cannot sit in a seat. If you have a laptop that's that big, that needs that much space, okay, you know what? You're not important really enough to be fucking using your laptop on the plane. All right? Whatever the fuck you're doing can wait until you get let on the ground. Either get a fucking iPad, okay, all right? Or you have a device that's too big. Because I have not been able to use a laptop in a plane really for a long time, okay? And when I resign myself to the fact, well, plane's too small. Not using a laptop. You know what? It can wait. I gotta be honest with you. When I first got a laptop, I used to use it a lot on the plane. And then I realized, fuck this. It's my time on the fucking plane. Let me just relax. I'll listen to some music. I'll have a drink, whatever. You know, whatever it is, it can wait.
Of course, some people could be doing the relaxing stuff on the laptop. They could be watching a movie on the laptop or something.
Okay, yeah. Well, then you need another smaller device to watch it in. Because the airlines did not give you enough fucking space to watch it on a big laptop. You can watch an iPad. You can watch a tablet.
And of course, this situation has been exacerbated by, as time has gone on, the airlines have been packing more and more seats in with less and less room.
Well, but you know what the worst thing is? That this argument ensued in the economy plus section of the fucking flight.
They already had the extra room.
So this jackass is in a section with extra room. And oh, by the way, that's not good enough for him. He wants more. Okay? I think the guy is absolutely wrong. Okay? I mean, especially the person in front of him paid to have the fucking extra space so they could go and fucking recline. Well, and this asshole's blocking him from it.
I mean, this is fundamentally where I come down. And I've been, you know, I don't fly anywhere near as often as you do. It's very rare for me to fly these days. But when I do fly, I admit I have felt self-conscious about whether or not I would recline. I look back there. I see if I'm going to be, you know, whatever. But fundamentally, the seat reclines.
Yes.
I bought a seat that has the functionality of reclining.
To recline.
I should be able to expect to use that functionality.
Yes.
And I mean, it only is a freaking inch or something.
It's
anyway.
Only like a fucking inch.
It's not like you get to like lay down.
No.
I mean, we're not talking about the first class cabins.
They have reduced the recline on these seats substantially. Okay. I mean,
not anymore. Most of the you used to get a significant recline on these.
Oh
things.
Yeah, you just get a little bit. Now
it just barely moves.
Right.
And I should be able to use if they don't want me to fucking recline, take away the damn button and don't let it recline.
Right.
But if I'm in a seat that has that functionality, I expect to be able to use
this. This guy kept talking about how he suffers because he has to fly so often, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know what? There are ways to avoid that. You know what? When I traveled all the time and I had to travel very often, you know what? I made sure that I got a fucking bulkhead seat or an exit row seat that had a lot of extra room. And you know what? I fucking went, if I reserved on a ticket and I couldn't find that there was a seat like that on a fucking flight, you know what? I wouldn't fucking take the flight. I would switch my flight to another one. Well, if this guy is that big, that he is that uncomfortable, that he encroaches into the other space, then damn it, why don't you find a fucking seat on the plane that is the size for you, because there are such in the plane, including fucking first class, motherfucker. So you go fucking get that seat. Why the hell does everybody else have to pay for his comfort?
Well, and I'll tell you, I mean, my wife, okay, she's a bigger woman. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
Be nice about it. But
no, okay.
She is uncomfortable in a regular airplane seat in coach.
Okay.
And she went a few times where she was flying and she did it and she was uncomfortable and it got to the point where once she got out of the plane, she was basically in pain for like a couple days afterwards.
Okay.
You know, and so more recently when she has had to fly, she's like, screw it, I'm buying the first class ticket.
There you go.
And suddenly it was a good experience for her.
Right.
You know, and hey, of course there are other amenities in first class. Of course it costs a lot of money too. Alex,
right.
You gotta go. Amy's here to take you. Bye, Alex.
But hey, the plane is made for the average adult.
Well, okay, all right. Even there, I mean, like, even average adults are a bit cramped at this point. They've been squishing the things down.
They're a bit cramped, but you're not like where anybody reclines. The average adult is not having their knees smashed by somebody in front reclining. They just are not. Okay? That is just not true. Okay? So, but like I said, listen, he's a bigger guy. You know what? If you have that complication, why don't you go and, like, you know, then you need to endeavor to get a seat that is in an exit row. You need to get a seat that's in a bulkhead. You need to get a seat in any of those sections that actually can fit a person of your size.
I mean, I'm not that big a guy. I mean, you know, I could stand to lose a few pounds, but I'm not like 6'10" and whatever. But, you know, and the last few times I've flown, I used to always prefer the window seats. I love the window seats. I like the view. I like the whatever. The last few times I've flown, I've made sure to get aisle seats. And part of that is because, you know, it gives me a little bit extra leg room because I can sort of kind of a little bit stick my leg out to the
side.
Your leg out
of the hallway. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, yeah, obviously you pull it in when people are going by or the food is going by or whatever, but you get a little tiny bit more room. And I've made a point of doing that just to get that. And, you know, Josh Barrow did an article on this as well. And he apparently had done something like this, done another article like this a long time ago, but reposted the basic argument and says, look, the property right of this is I bought my seat. I bought its reclining functionality.
Exactly.
And if you have a problem with it, if you really, really have a problem with
pay
it,
pay me,
offer me some money. Give me some money and maybe I will agree not to recline my seat.
Listen, like, for example, I have had, let's say, for example, I'll tell you something. Look, I'm not going to be a complete jerk about it. Look, if I'm on a flight and somebody behind me is that tall, and they politely ask me to not recline, I have gone and not done that. I remember I was on a flight. It was one of these flights that was completely packed. PAC flight, okay, flying from San Juan to New York a long time ago. There's a very tall guy behind me. Now, the guy was, and we got on the flight, 4.5 hour flight. I wanted to recline. And the guy asked me to put the seat back forward. And, you know, and he said, look, you know, and I did. Okay.
Well, like I said, when I've done it, you know, I've always looked very carefully at who's behind me. Does it look like they have space? Are they, you know, do they have their laptop out and they're trying to do something? And if it feels like I'm going to cause them a problem, I don't do it usually. You know, I want to be considerate of that guy behind me. However, you know, if it's my general expectation is I will be able to recline. Now I've been on the flip side of this as well, where I've been sitting there and the guy in front of me reclines and I'm like, oh fuck. Cause you suddenly have so much less space, but I'm not the one who taps their shoulder and asks them to not recline. I'll be like, okay, they recline. That's their privilege. I'll deal with it. It's part of what you expect. You know, and it's unfortunate that this is the reality of air travel these days, but coach air travel sucks. It's horrible.
It's not great. It's not great. No, not particularly.
I know you've had enough miles that you do it fairly frequently, but, you know, I've only very rarely done first class, and first class is wonderful. I love it. But normally, if I'm flying, I'm flying coach. And it sucks, and it's uncomfortable, and it's cramped, and you know I'm not a big guy. I'm not a tiny guy, but I'm not a big guy. But it sucks. And you get out of the plane, and you're like very glad to get out of the plane. But you know, it's what you expect these days from airline travel. And like you said, if you want something else, you have to shell out the cash for it. And that's unfortunate, but it's the truth. And I can't even imagine going into my flight and putting those damn devices on the plane to stop the guy from reclining. That's just fundamentally a jackass move to start with.
Yeah, I agreed.
I mean, if I really, really had a problem and, you know, I couldn't afford the more expensive seat with more legroom or whatever, and or it was all booked and this is the only seat I could get, whatever. Worst comes to worst, I politely ask the guy in front of me, please, I don't have very much room here. I'm pretty big. I'd really appreciate it if you didn't recline.
That would be a much nicer thing, you know? I mean, you know, on a cramped flight, you know, things get bad. Yeah, sure. But, you know, look, I mean, I'm sorry. I've had to fly my very fair share of 10 hours sitting on a freaking coach seat. You know, for some fucking asshole behind me to try to tell me that I can't recline in order to try to get a little bit of sleep. He go screw himself.
But let me ask this, Yvonne. Would you throw a glass of water in their face?
No, I would not. I definitely would not. I would not stoop.
Do you think they were justified in ejecting both of them from the plane?
I think when the person threw the glass of water in front of the other person's face, yes.
Now, do you think they had to divert the plane? Could they have resolved this without, like,
landing
the plane?
Well, it depends on how much arguing and bickering happened on the freaking plane. If I were the pilot, I would have diverted the plane. I would have fucking thrown them both off.
At least they landed before they threw them off.
Well, good point. Now, but, you know, there's somebody over here that went and, that they're talking about this, and what they said, you know, arguing against the guy, and he said, you know, they're talking about both people, and he's saying that both guys are jerks, but he's saying that the guy with a knee defender is probably more of a jerk than the woman who reclined, and he says, why? Well, this is perhaps a bit of a sophomoric defense, but he started it. If you made a list of things you'd expect to see on an airplane among fellow travelers, suitcases, small packets of nuts, you'd also very likely list reclining seats. Reclining seats are to be expected, a known entity. They are part of the social contract, okay? What is not part of the social contract? The knee defender is not part of the social contract. Okay? It just isn't. I mean, I'm sorry.
Now,
you know?
Now you can see the other side of this, too. Like, let's say, take the knee defender out of the equation, and just the person in the seat in front, you know, sees the guy in the back is cramped, sees they've got their laptop up, open, whatever, and just violently pushes themselves back quickly. Yeah, you can be a dick about being in the front, too.
No. You totally can be. I mean, that you're talking about this case, okay? Yeah. All right? Because this guy went and fucking wedged the seat so she couldn't recline. I mean, let's face it. Okay, I mean, this guy did it on purpose. Not like this person started anything. I mean, this person, you know, you're there and you're going, what the hell's going on? You know, seat's not working, you know? So, I mean, yeah, I mean, now, you know.
Yeah, having a seat that isn't reclined is a reason to complain to the airline.
Yes, I mean, I've complained about it when I've had that issue. I've been moved from it to a different seat because the seat recline has been inoperative. Yes, and they have moved me to a different seat.
Anyway,
you know what? This guy needs to. There is a very cool website for this kind of. It's called SeatGuru.com. Uh-huh. All right, SeatGuru has. Airline map has maps of every aircraft on every airline, and it will tell you which seats have more space, less space, etc., whatever. If you are, instead of going online and buying the stupid $30 knee defender, if Mr. Jerkoff had just gone to that website and he could go through the seat maps and figure out which seats are more comfortable for a person of his size that supposedly flies a lot, he'd probably be a lot more comfortable and create less enemies than going and buying some stupid device that really is to piss off other people.
He probably didn't want an exit row either, because if you're an exit row, you're supposed to have to help people in an emergency.
Oh, well, heaven forbid that you'd want to help somebody in a fucking emergency.
Yeah, I don't know. You think there's ever a chance that we'll get to a situation sometime in the future where the trend to making these seats smaller and smaller reverses?
Well, I mean, look, you got to remember, people want to fly, and
this,
you know,
is how you can make it affordable.
This is how you can make make it affordable. I mean, it is what it is. I mean,
are we going to move to
what they are doing is that they are doing different sections for different prices. Are
we going to move to standing room only planes?
I don't think so.
A lot more people.
No, I don't think so. But the one thing is that I will say this. I know in Russia, in certain places, they used to do that on a regular basis, mind you. The old days of Aeroflot, they would take off with people standing room only in the fucking plane. They didn't care.
Well, at least they don't do like the trains you always see in India with people piled on top, too.
Now on a plane, that would be a little bit tougher. But, you know,
Give them handles. They can hold on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great. Yeah, great idea. But look, what you're seeing airlines doing is that they're charging for different levels of service. They're really segmenting it even more. So now that there's not just coach, there's coach plus, and then there's, you know, business and first class. I mean, there's different levels of service. Listen, people who want more amenities, more this, more that, they're selling that to you a la carte to a certain extent. So, you know, I think that they're making it that if you really – listen, if you're just a kid and you want to travel, you know, or you can't afford it, you want to travel cheap, hey, you'll get there, okay? It's not going to be the, you know, the most luxurious ride, but hey, we'll get you there. Hey, you want a little bit more room, you want a little bit more this, you want a little bit more that, well, hey, pay a couple of extra bucks and, you know, we'll treat you nicer, but, you know.
Or a lot of extra bucks, depending.
Or a lot of extra bucks. I mean, there's ranges. I mean, there's stuff from paying a little bit for a little bit to a lot for a lot, you know? I don't know. Somebody, a friend of mine today from Mexico, you know, sent me this video of the Emirates first class suite. You know, it's like, not that I hadn't seen it before, but, you know, yeah, $50,000 for a round trip flight from the U.S. to Dubai. Nah, I think that's a little bit pricey. Can I be honest? You know, I think that's above most humans' budget. I know I'm never paying that kind of money for a fucking airline ticket.
Yeah, but it would be comfy.
No.
And if you want a super comfy ride, arrange to become president of the United States and ride around an Air Force
One. Exactly. Ride around an Air Force One. Now that is traveling in style. There you go. Now we're talking. Now we're really talking.
As long as you're in the front of the plane, if you're the president. Right. The back of the plane where the reporters is just basically coach. But, you know.
No.
The
seats are a little bit better than that. No.
I know. I'm, I was exaggerating for effect, damn it.
It's not Coach. It's even at the back, it's not Coach. It's still Air Force One.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, we're done.
Yes, we are done. Thank you, everybody, for joining us yet again. If you made it this far, as usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com. Contact us on Twitter. I'm at abelsmay. Yvonne is at imbo. And we love to hear from you. Tell your friends, all that kind of stuff. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.